rather fuller and more mature. No sooner were these females seated than their attendant sprang into the saddle when the three bowed to Webb, who awaited their parting. They proceeded at a slow amble, followed by their train toward the northern entrance of the encampment. A slight exclamation proceeded from the younger of the females as the Indian runner glided by her unexpectedly and led the way along the military road. While one of the lovely beings was lost in thought, the other inquired of the youth who rode by her side, "Are such specters frequent in the woods, Hayward? If so, both Cora and I shall have need to draw on that stock of hereditary courage which we boast." "Yon Indian is a runner of the army, and after the fashion of his people he may be accounted a hero," returned the officer. "He has volunteered to guide us to the lake, by a path but little known, sooner than if we follow the tardy movements of the column."
"I like him not," said the lady. "You know him, Duncan?"
"I do, or he would not have my confidence."
The Indian stood, pointing into the thicket that fringed the military road. A narrow and blind path which might receive one person at a time became visible.
"Here lies our way," said the young man.
"Cora, what think you?" asked the fair one. "If we journey with the troops, though we may find their presence irksome, shall we not feel better assurance of our safety?"
"Being little accustomed to the practices of the savages, Alice, you mistake the place of real danger," said Hayward. "If enemies have reached the portage, they will surely be found skirting the column where scalps abound. The route of the detachment is known, while ours, having been determined within the hour, must still be secret."
"Should we distrust the man because his manners are not our manners, and that his skin is dark?" coldly asked Cora.
Alice hesitated no longer, but giving her horse a smart cut of the whip, followed the runner along the pathway. It would seem that the domestics had been previously instructed, for instead of penetrating the thicket, they followed the route of the column, a measure which Hayward stated had been dictated by their guide, in order to diminish the marks of their trail. The youth had turned to speak to Cora, when the distant sound of horses' hooves caused him to check his charger. The whole party came to a halt. In a few moments, a colt was seen, and in another instant, the person of the ungainly man described in the preceding chapter came into view. The frown which had gathered around the brow of Hayward relaxed, and his lips curled into a smile as he regarded the stranger. Alice made no effort to control her merriment, and even the dark, thoughtful eye of Cora lighted with humor. "Seek you any here?" demanded Hayward. "I hear you are riding to William Henry. As I am journeying thitherward myself, I concluded good company would seem consistent to the wishes of both parties." "You appear to possess the privilege of a casting vote," returned Hayward. "Even so. The first point to be obtained is to know one's own mind. Once sure of that, the next is to act up to the decision. I have endeavored to do both, and here I am." "If you journey to the lake, you have mistaken your route," said Hayward. "The highway thither is at least half a mile behind you."
"Even so," returned the stranger.
"It is not prudent for any one of my profession to be too familiar with those he has to instruct, for which reason I follow not the line of the army. Besides which, I conclude that a gentleman of your character has the best judgment in matters of wayfaring. I have therefore decided to join company, in order that the ride may be made agreeable."
"A most arbitrary decision," exclaimed Hayward.
"But you speak of instruction, and of a profession. Are you an adjunct to the provincial corps?"
The stranger regarded his interrogator a moment, and then, in an expression of solemn humility, he answered,
"I lay claim to no higher gift than a small insight into the glorious art of petitioning and thanksgiving, as practiced in psalmody."
"The man is a disciple of Apollo," cried the amused Alice, "and I take him under my own protection. Hayward, suffer him to journey in our train. Besides, it may be a friend added to our strength in time of need."
Yielding to her gentle influence, Hayward clapped his spurs into his charger.
"I am glad to encounter thee, friend," continued the maiden, waving her hand to the stranger to proceed. "You have limited your efforts to sacred song?"
"Even so." The stranger had drawn the book from his pocket, opened the volume with a care and veneration suited to its sacred purposes. Then he commenced singing in full and melodious tones. Such an innovation on the silence of the forest could not fail to enlist the ears of those who journeyed at so short a distance in advance. The Indian muttered a few words in broken English to Hayward, who, in his turn, spoke to the stranger.
"Though we are not in danger, common prudence would teach us to journey through this wilderness in as quiet a manner as possible. You will pardon me, Alice, should I diminish your enjoyment by requesting this gentleman to postpone his chant until a safer opportunity?"